big news is the return of Tiger Woods. It was announced on the Jupiter Lynx and TGL social channels that Tiger would tee it up in tonight's match two for the first time this season. Now, Eamon, I don't know what your average Tuesday night viewing habits are, but it's a two-part question here. What's your level of interest, and what are your expectations for Tiger tonight?
It's interesting in the sense of just to see what the physicality of the golf swing looked like. And it's a savvy public relations move for Tiger, for his TGL investment to show up for what might actually be the last match of the season. Worst case scenario, it's the penultimate match of the season. The interest level, I'm not sure it's all that high in terms of the long term, in terms of the real green grass golf. I mean, Palm Beach Gardens is a few hundred miles from Augusta, but TGL is light years away from the Masters. There are no hills that he's going to have to walk in a simulator. There's no real pressure. And his physical swing is certainly going to be analysed in terms of how sharp it looks. But in terms of the actual meaningfulness of this as it relates to the Masters, I don't think that's there at all.
I'm going to do the 1 to 10 scale on this one and say my level of interest is a 6, only because it's Tiger Woods. And like, look, he makes everything better. You and I have done this for a long time. We see what happens when he's at events. You're 100% correct. There is nothing he's going to do tonight in either match. Let's say it does go through to the third match. That's going to influence my decision on if he plays the Masters or not, if he's going to be competitive at the Masters or not. However, it's been 613 days since he last hit a meaningful shot. That was in 2024 at the Open Championship. I think as a golf fan, not just someone who covers the game professionally, I'm interested. I'm always going to be interested. Even at 50 years old, when Tiger shows up, the level of interest for me is going to be high.
It does seem we have this conversation pretty much every year at this point. This will he, won't he, relating to the Masters and whether Tiger shows up. And at this stage, it feels as though he teases more often than a school bully in terms of will he or won't he. And it would be great to see Tiger Woods play again at Augusta National. The question really ought to be not so much will he show up, will he matter if he does show up? And the answer to that is no. It's a sentimental trip for Tiger at the Masters, but you'd have to really ignore the last 5-6 years of almost complete inactivity and how much the game has moved on to really believe that Tiger still has a run of any kind of contention left in him at Augusta National.
Now, the fan in me wants to say you're absolutely wrong. I want to say that, look, he did it. He caught lightning in a bottle.
I'd love to be proved wrong on that one.
Not that long ago, he caught lightning in a bottle. The fact of the matter is he has gone through 3 pretty serious procedures since then. We all see how difficult it is. That's why tonight is interesting to me. You're absolutely right. It's an indoor simulator. There are no hills. He has to hit, I think at best, a dozen shots. A couple of those are putts. He's going to be sitting on a bench. So there's nothing I'm going to see tonight that influences my decision one way or the other. And I've seen the toll Augusta National takes on him. It's difficult for him just to navigate those hills. Forget about having to try to play 72 holes. So I would tend to agree. I'm not quite sure how competitive he would be, but it would be fun to see him back.
Unless he hits those 12 shots perfectly, in which case we're all believers again. Well, the PGA Tour has completed its Florida swing. It's moved west to the Texas Children's Houston Open. You can catch live first-round coverage this Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That is right here on Golf Channel. And for more from Houston, we say hello to Amy Rogers. And Amy has some news on the world number one.
Hey there, Eamon. That's right. Well, Scottie Scheffler was a late addition to the field here in Houston. His name no sooner added to the field on Friday than we learned here Tuesday morning that he had withdrawn from the tournament. The PGA Tour telling us he cited family reasons as the reason for that decision to not tee it up here this week. Now, Scheffler has 3 times been a runner-up here in Houston, including the last 2 years. Now, he did not tee it up last week at the Valspar Championship, and he currently has not committed to the field next week at the Valero Texas Open, which would be his last opportunity to tee it up before the Masters.
All right, Amy, let's focus on one player that will be in the field this week. That's Mason Howe. He's had an excellent amateur career. This will be his 3rd start on the PGA Tour. You had a chance to catch up with him.
I did. The 2025 U.S. Amateur winner, Mason Howe, is certainly having a lot more fun than his fellow high school seniors here this week who are all back in school. Howe received a sponsor's exemption to compete here this week in Houston, where he will make his tournament debut. Last year, he qualified for the U.S. Open and received a sponsor's exemption to compete at the RSM Classic last season as well. He wasn't able to make it to the weekend, missing the cut in both both of those starts last year. But I had a chance to speak with the 18-year-old earlier today as he arrived on the driving range. I asked him about his goals for this week, as well as what he would be doing back home if he wasn't teeing it up right now on the PGA Tour.
Right now, I think I'd be in statistics class. So definitely glad I'm out here on the range at a PGA Tour event. But yeah, just super happy to be here this week. And yeah, we'll catch up on the grades when I get back home.
You got a chance to compete last year at the U.S. Open and at the RSM. What did you learn from those experiences that can help you here this week?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I learned that these guys are really good, and I just got to stay within myself and know that I'm good enough deep down to play some good golf and, you know, make a cut out here and play well on a weekend. So it's all about self-belief, and I feel like if I can just stay within myself and know my limits and not press too hard, I feel like I can play well here this week.
What does that mean to you, staying within yourself? What does that look like here this week?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I feel like I'm just not trying to press my playing partners or anything. Just doing what I'm capable of right now. And then whenever the time comes to make birdies, make birdies. And whenever you need to save par, save par. So it's one of those things. I feel like I learned it a lot at Oakmont last year. You couldn't get too aggressive in some spots. So, yeah, it should be a lot of fun this week.
What would be a successful week here in your mind? What would you like to achieve?
Yeah, I definitely want to make a cut, make my first professional cut. And at the same time, when I can do that, I feel like I can play free on the weekend and just see where that takes me.
Hal arrived here in the Houston area on Sunday, and he played in the Pro-Am here yesterday. He told me that he does like this golf course. Now, this is one of several starts he's going to be making on a big stage in the coming weeks with that U.S. amateur victory. He also earned a spot in the field at the Masters in the coming weeks. He said he's already made several trips to Augusta National to scope out the golf course. So, Eamon and Rex, this high school senior, certainly not keeping the regular schedule of a high schooler.
Thank you so much, Amy. Looking forward to reports from you all week long from Houston.
It's time now for another Golf Today Roundtable. I will welcome in two guys who are much more likely to end up in straitjackets than green jackets. Sorry to say, Golf Channel senior writer Ryan Lavner and Joel Beal from Golf Digest. Ryan, I want to start with you. This latest move by Tiger, you got to admire his PR savvy to show up for the very last day of the TGL season when, you know, there's not a lot can be asked of him in one day.
Yeah, there's certainly a WWE quality to this with the co-founder of the league swooping at the last possible moment to potentially save his team that is on the brink of elimination. But this isn't real golf. It's an entertainment product. I think this is good, clean, harmless, fun, and certainly good publicity for the league on its final night. Rex and I are going to be doing the podcast on Wednesday morning, and I will be meticulously detailing all 12 of Tiger Woods' shots and extrapolating what it might mean for the rest of the 2026 season. I kid, of course, because this doesn't mean really anything for his Masters chances. Rex and I talked about it on the Sunday night podcast. I think it would have been more worrisome had he not played in TGL at all, just given the small lift and the limited load that he would actually having to be carrying in a two-hour broadcast. But I think it's, I guess, somewhat optimistic that he's actually playing, but I don't know that it actually means anything.
All right, Joel, I'll go to you for the news of the day. Our Amy Rogers just reported that Scottie Scheffler withdrew from this week's event in Houston. What's your level of concern with the Masters 2 weeks away?
No concern at all. I guess, you know, his play, it's been a compliment, if anything, to Scheffler that anytime he hasn't won, there's the question of what's wrong with Scotty. And if anything, I think those questions have really started annoying him. I think we saw it at the Players. He was a little more testier than usual inside the ropes and out. So I think being able to take a week off, being able to get right for the Masters, attend to family matters, I think this will ultimately help his disposition. And that's, you know, going into Augusta National, a place where his record is honestly unmatched from anyone of his peers. All games of the fast that have to be right, and that includes the mental mindset. So I think this will all be a good thing for Scotty's chances.
Joel, on the subject of players getting a little testy, there was a great little subtext to the Valspar Championship of the weekend. Matt Fitzpatrick voiced his discontent with the slow play of his playing partner on Sunday. But it was unusual in the sense that he was quite open about that in the press, and he made the effort to go to a rules official on the golf course to demand that action be taken. Is that what actually needs to happen out here a little more often for the tour to take action? Is that the players actually get involved and start calling each other out when it matters?
Absolutely, especially with the stigma attached that comes with it. You know, we've discussed product a lot the past couple of years when it's come to professional golf, and a lot of that has centered on players and schedule. you could argue pace of play is paramount to anything else regarding what the PGA Tour is presenting on a week-to-week basis. I suppose that's the most frustrating aspect of this, is that every year we talk about slow play and nothing changes. So it really is incumbent on people like Fitzpatrick and other players calling out. I think there is hope. It's that enough folks in the tour's private equity side have baseball ties, and they've seen the difference the pitch clock has made to their sport. I wouldn't be surprised if we see something similar implemented in the very near future, especially with people, these instances like Fitzpatrick speaking up, because it's not a great look to have other guys calling out other guys, but I think that's ultimately what needs to happen for us to see real change implemented.
Lav, you and I talked about this on the podcast on Monday, the idea that Brooks Koepka's play has improved incrementally over the week since he's come back to the PGA Tour. But is there anything you need to see from him this week in Houston heading to the Masters?
I don't think so, Rex. And in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if this was the week that Brooks Koepka puts it all together. Keep in mind, he's a player consultant on the golf course. As he knows better than anyone, Memorial Park rewards distance. It rewards speed. It's not as penal as certainly some of the courses that we saw on the Florida swing as well. He's actually been, Brooks Koepka has, the top iron player on the PGA Tour this season, seems to have figured out some of the putting issues at the Cognizant, much better at the Players' Championship. I showed some good signs as well last week at Innisbrook. We could have been looking at a much different record for Brooks Koepka with three consecutive top 10 finishes heading into Houston, if not for a couple of late double bogeys, first in the 72nd hole at the Players' Championship on Sunday, as well as on the 70th hole of the tournament in Tampa. Would have been back-to-back-to-back top 10 finishes. All of a sudden, we're looking at a resurgent Brooks Koepka and a slightly different narrative heading into the Masters. As it sits right now, though, I think he's in fine shape. Would not be surprised if this is the week that he puts it all together in Houston.
Joel, John Rahm's also on the favorites list heading to Augusta as well. Somewhat interesting story going on with him in Europe. He withdrew his appeal of the disciplinary fines imposed upon him. He says he's not going to pay them. He says he's not going to take the same settlement deal that was offered to his peers on LIV, which really leaves one outcome, which is he would be formally suspended and ineligible for the Ryder Cup next year. Do you think he's determined to play this game of brinkmanship to the end on the assumption that the Europeans couldn't conceive of going to a Ryder Cup without him?
I think trying to figure out what John Rahm is thinking is a fool's errand. What we've seen the last couple of years, ultimately fueled by pride and ego, it's been really disconcerting to see these type of actions from a guy I think a lot of us thought we knew. So to me, I'm more interested in what the DP World Tour will do. The Europeans made such a stink about the Americans getting compensated for the Ryder Cup last year, understandably so, although an argument that could be made that, you know, the Ryder Cup conveniently is the primary financial catalyst that keeps the DP World Tour afloat. But on this, I'd like to think they'll stand on principle on Rahm, which means, you know, he would be suspended, especially since Hatton and others have already taken the deal. But I also have a hard time believing they're going to leave Rahm on the sidelines if he doesn't bend to their very generous offer. And personally, to me, I think this potentially has the chance to become another black eye on an event that is quickly spiraling away from the spirit that I think attracts all of us to it in the first place. So, yeah, to me, I'm more interested to see how the DP World Tour plays this.
Now, Lav, you're big on doing lists, so I'm going to lead this into it for you. The idea that Bryson DeChambeau has back-to-back wins on LIV Golf coming off of two events. What do you put him on your list of favorites for the Masters this year?
Well, Rex, you and I are Golf Channel's gambling experts, and so I would defer to Vegas on this one, where Vegas has as their top five Scotty, Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, and Ludvig Åberg as their top five favorites for the Masters, and it's hard to disagree. I will say, though, given the Scotty Scheffler news, given the fact that Rory has not added a tournament between the Players' Championship and the Masters, given John Rahm's has only one victory in the past year and a half, Ludvig Åberg, some scar tissue of what happened at the Players' Championship. Yeah, it does feel a little bit more wide open than maybe it would have felt a couple of months ago when Scotty would have been and probably still will be the prohibitive favorite. You could also make a case for some other players. Xander Schauffele, who's shown some good form. Obviously, the Players' Champion Cam Young already has two top 10 finishes at Augusta National as well. Things are setting up well, Rex, for Bryson DeChambeau. Back-to-back top six finishes at Augusta National, a golf course that he had not played particularly well. In fact, his best finish prior to 2024 was back as an amateur in 2016. He's putted well in Augusta National as well. His driver is going to continue to be a weapon. If his iron play is a little bit sharper than it was in 2025, I think there's little reason to believe that he can't be competitive once again.
In that video we just saw, Joel, the LIV tournament in South Africa actually had crowds for a change, which they normally only see in Adelaide. Do you see that as a sign that the product is getting some traction, or is it evidence that there are golf-savvy markets out there that the main tours have just simply underserved or ignored for too long?
Absolutely, on the latter front. I think if you're trying to extrapolate anything from Australia and South Africa, it's that there are places in the world where they're desperate for any type of golf. In this case, you know, golf that's not quite top tier. It's funny talking to tour folks at the Players. There still seems to be a hubris when you try to extrapolate anything from LIV Golf into their own lessons. And I think that's a mistake, because despite all of its failings, LIV Golf has made inroads in the international market. It begs you wonder, should they just strictly stay on that market and avoid their American centric schedule? That tickets have already sold out for next year's South African event show that there still is this need, this want, this desire for good golf around the world. And as the PGA Tour contemplates this new schedule, to totally ignore the global market, I think, would be a big mistake.
Joe, I'm going to give away a bit of a secret here. I sat in close proximity to you and the rest of the Golf Digest crew 2 weeks ago at the Players' Championship. And there was one afternoon where there was a lively debate about how there has to be another match play event on the PGA Tour schedule. I don't want to get into the specifics, and I don't want to give away what your angle was, but do you believe match play is the answer, let's say, for the Tour Championship?
Personally, I would love to see it. I just have a hard time seeing it come to fruition. That there's so much pushback. It's great in theory, right? The idea of having a Scheffler versus Rory or someone of that magnitude coming down the stretch. The upshot is having two guys outside the top 25 facing each other down on a Sunday afternoon with only two guys on the course. It's just really hard to pull off from a broadcasting standpoint. I think the downside is too great. There's a reason why it's been pushed back in the past, and even with the new ownership and the new regime, there's too much downside to really implement it, at least right now in its current iteration.
All right, Lab, that's a bit of a stray. I'm going to give you a little bit of time. You love the match play idea. Go ahead, tell everyone why.
I love the match play idea at the Tour Championship. I love the match play idea as a regular season event on the PGA Tour. I love the idea of match play at least sprinkled throughout the LIV schedule as it relates specifically to the Tour Championship. I do think there is a way to sort of jerry-rig the format, sort of steal a page from the Western Amateur, where you have some sort of stroke play qualifying leading in to a smaller match play bracket, say 8 players, that you can at least sort of make sure you're cherry-picking the very best players that week, the very best players that season, then have a couple of other matches that are played out on the weekend as well. You have to get creative. I don't think the traditional format that we saw for the WGC Dell match play would necessarily work, because I do think you could have some flukiness. I do think you could have a potential dud finale to determine the overall FedEx Cup champion. But I do think there is a way with a smaller match play bracket that it could be compelling. But like Joel says, I'm not sure that they can come up with a creative enough way that it's going to satisfy everybody.
Everyone in the studio is screaming rap. We appreciate your take, Lab. Thank you, boys.
You got it.
Thanks, guys.
Well, coming up after the break, we're talking with a man who aims to make Tiger's TGL return a one-game-only disappointment. Justin Rose will be here next. Well, welcome in Justin Rose now, who is at the SoFi Center in South Florida preparing himself for tonight's TGL final. And Justin, it's good to see you. I'm assuming you're not planning to take any pity on Tiger Woods tonight and you want to see him play one game and be done. You don't want him to have the opportunity to play two?
Yeah, you know, we want to keep Tiger rested. We don't want him coming out too quickly and getting himself overgolfed, you know, right out the gate. So that would be the ideal scenario for us. Obviously, anybody wearing black, that would be the case. But obviously, yeah, an exciting evening having him return to the competitive side of golf, for sure.
I'll go back to last night on the last hole. Your team dropped the hammer, ended up winning 6-5, pretty commanding. You were such a data-driven player. How much have you leaned into the strategy part of it this year in your TGL matches?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I feel like that's not necessarily one of my strengths from a sort of the team point of view, is like the hammer strategy and all of that. But all you do know is you've got to keep yourself in the game. You've got to keep it tight. You know, we've won. What I did know is that I felt like there were a few games where we got off to a 3 or 4 hole or point lead, and all of a sudden, it's amazing how you can sneak back into the game with the right hammer at the right time. But you've also got to play, you know, you've got to play the right golf to kind of capitalize upon those hammer decisions. And I think we were I didn't think it was, obviously the last night was kind of a really fun match, but it wasn't necessarily a high quality match. It was more fun because of the mishaps and the drama rather than obviously the stunning and stellar golf. But that's often the nature of a final. You know, it's about winning. It doesn't matter how you win. But we knew we just had to hang in there. And obviously we knew that we were keeping track of our hammers towards the end of the game because we understood that it could turn the game around. But obviously I think the big moment was, you know, by accepting the hammer on the previous hole, we risked not getting to the 18th. You know, we could have fallen 3 points down and that would have been all over. But it's very hard to take the golf club out of Tommy Fleetwood's hands, especially, you know, with an accessible pin like it was. But, you know, good for him for stepping up. And obviously that set the stage for Sir Heath to go ahead and make two clutch swings. And, yeah, I felt like Jupiter Links were a little bit unlucky. Kiz made a good swing off of the last hole there and just sort of ended up in the rough, which was a bit of a chain reaction of events. But it was a tight game. But, yeah, like you say, the strategy of it is just stay in the game, really, nothing more than that.
Justin, I know it's a schedule adjustment for you to accommodate TGL along with your PGA Tour schedule, especially when your family lives at home in England. And I know you were back there last week. There was a pretty special gift waiting for you when you got there. I saw your post on social media. Tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, two good friends of mine who are in the golf business themselves, they sort of caught wind of the fact that this trophy that you're watching now on screen kind of came to auction. It was the Victor Chandler British Masters trophy. And I won it in 2002, which is the last edition of it. My name is the last name on the trophy there. But the reason it's so special is it's the only event or only trophy that my father was able to watch me win in person. And we have a really nice photograph at home with me, my mum, my sister and my dad kind of all together touching the trophy. So, you know, he's physically touched that trophy. From my point of view, it was a really important. So he passed away about three or four months later. And that was the biggest tournament I'd won to that point. And for me, it was kind of like leaving him at peace and kind of showing him that, you know, after all those miscuts and all of the, you know, the tough start that I did have to my pro career, that I was kind of up and running and on my way, which is obviously all he would have ever wanted for me. So, yeah, from my point of view, that's one of the most poignant wins of my career. And to have that physical trophy now sort of physically represent all those great memories I have is super, super special.
Now, Eamon just touched on this. What are the challenges for your schedule? You've played six PGA Tour events as well as a full TGL schedule. How difficult is that?
Yeah, I think this time of year is always tough for just sort of like, let's just say the family side and the sacrifice side that goes along with that. I think I'm basically home 1 week out of 13 at this stage of the season. So, you know, my family did travel out to see me once or twice during that period. But yeah, I mean, listen, you know, being home once in 13 weeks is obviously, it's just sort of a nature of the business at the moment. But and with that, I think I have to be patient with myself in terms of my game. But, you know, it's all designed around trying to peak at the right times and be ready for the big tournaments. And yes, so obviously the West Coast back to the UK is not a trip you can take lightly. And yeah, there's some pushes and pulls there to be balanced. And there's, you know, but the good thing is I'm enjoying it. Do you know what I mean? I'm enjoying my golf. I think the minute you're not enjoying it and you have those types of also added pressures in your life, that's when it becomes a frustration. But right now, you know, I'm enjoying the challenge of my golf and what it's giving me. So that those commitments, I'm not going to call them sacrifices, are well worthwhile.
There's an ongoing story in Europe, Justin, that you've paid attention to, as so many others have, in terms of how John Rahm works out his deal with the DP World Tour going forward. And John's obviously not keen on paying any of the fines that were assessed. Do you think it's at all feasible that the European Ryder Cup team may not actually have John available next year by his choice?
I think it is absolutely feasible, yeah. I think that the line in the sand has been drawn. I think quite a few players have committed to the strategy that the DP World Tour has set forward in terms of paying the fines and or playing some extra tournaments to help bolster their schedule. I think the DP World Tour are willing to work with John, so it's going to take a bit of compromise. But, you know, I hope we can find that sort of common ground now. But I think, yeah, you know, from my point of view, I think the DP World Tour stance is relatively reasonable. Well, is reasonable on it in terms of, you know, if you play an event opposite one of their events, you clearly, by nature of that, you're weakening their tour and their opportunity to go out and create impact in the game of golf. So therefore, if you want to be a member of the tour, yes, you get a fine. And I've been in that situation too, where I've played elsewhere outside of the DP World Tour opposite one of their events and also been fined. So, you know, I feel like it is sort of, I'm good with the strategy because clearly they're trying to make their tour as strong as possible, and yeah, which is not an easy task.
Rosie, you've played your entire career against Tiger Woods. You've been in that arena with him. For now, for those of us in the media, clearly it changes our focus. We always pay more attention when Tiger seems to be playing. But from a competitor standpoint, does it make you focus, lock in a little bit more?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, he definitely always brings, when he walks into a room, you know, he brings an atmosphere and an aura about it and about him. And obviously, we've all grown up sort of revering him and sort of setting him as the benchmark and the standard. So absolutely. I think, you know, we've seen him sort of mellow out, I suppose, from that point of view, because he hasn't been as intensely competing, but he's still been around the game. And he's obviously given a lot of himself to the sport in the last couple of years in many other ways that haven't obviously been on people's televisions at home, but he's still very committed to the PGA Tour, and he's still kind of creating opportunity for us, even without his golf clubs by his side. But obviously, I think still everybody likes to see Tiger playing golf, and obviously what he's capable of. And I'm curious tonight too to see where he's at. You know, he's sort of has been practicing behind closed doors for the most part, so it will be fascinating to see, you know, where he's at in terms of speed and how he's moving and all those types of things. So it'll be a fun watch.
Before we let you go, Justin, this summer the Open's returning to Birkdale, where you had your breakout moment as a 17-year-old kid back in 1998. If 45-year-old Justin Rose could go back in 1998, what would you tell 17-year-old Justin Rose about what lies ahead?
Well, I'd say just hang in there, kid. It's all going to be okay. You'll be all right. I think, I'm sort of proud of the career I've been able to have since being a 17-year-old kid. But I'd also like the 17-year-old kid to tell the 45-year-old guy to kind of continue just to keep having fun with it, to keep playing as free as possible. And you know, sort of all the baggage you accumulate or you can accumulate through the years, whether that's mental or whatever it might be. I think I've only ever played better golf by stripping things back, not adding more things in. So, you know, I think a nice combination now will be the experience that I have as a 45-year-old, maybe with that sort of playful enthusiasm as a 17-year-old. Maybe that's the secret sauce for Birkdale.
A great message for all the kids out there. Justin, it's always great to spend time with you. We look forward to watching you in action again tonight.
All right, guys. Thanks for that. Cheers. See you soon.
Stick around for more golf today. We're going to be joined by Regan Zabilski, senior at the University of Arkansas, who next week will have the opportunity of a lifetime to compete in the Augusta National Women's Amateur for the first time.
Well, earlier this year, Regan Zabilski, who's on the Arkansas women's golf team, accepted her invitation to the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Going to make her debut in the championship just a few weeks after beginning her senior season with four top six finishes in the fall schedule. Last year, she reached the round of 64 in the U.S. Women's Amateur. And Zabilski is one of three Arkansas Razorbacks who are going to compete at Augusta National. Her teammate, Maria Jose Marin, is the NCAA individual champion last year. And Regan joins us now. Regan, what is the anticipation level like? You're just a week away from the Augusta National Women's Amateur. How's the excitement?
Through the roof. I'm so excited. It's every amateur golfer's dream to compete at the Augusta National Women's Amateur, and just to get the opportunity, I'm just so grateful, and to do it with my teammates is even better. So we're in the thick of the season. We leave for a tournament tomorrow, but we're all super excited.
I was going to ask you, there's three Razorbacks who got invited to the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Have you asked for any advice from Maria, who's played in it twice before?
Of course, yeah. We've been talking about it nonstop. Just kind of like course game plan, what it's like when we get there, the vibes. And we're just all super excited for each other, but also to compete out there. And we're going to play our practice rounds together. So we'll be a unit all week.
There's always so much focus on the Augusta National portion of it, Regan, but there's also 36 holes at Champions Retreat to get to first. And that's always proven to be a pretty difficult test during the event. Is it difficult not to get ahead of yourself and think to what that final round might be like on Saturday and kind of lose focus on the first couple of rounds?
It's definitely possible, yeah. And you brought up a good point. Champions Retreat, it's a championship golf course, and especially depending on the weather, it's normally pretty firm from what I'm hearing, and good off the tee, but you really have to play solid golf there, and you can't get too ahead of yourself thinking about the final round, and you really have to put your best foot forward to make a good run and put yourself in a good position for Augusta National.
Going back to the advice that Maria gave you, was there one thing that she told you to fixate on that week? Make sure you enjoyed it.
Yeah, honestly, A, just enjoy the experience. I know I'm a senior and it's my first time, but also going to be my last time. So really, really focusing on being where my feet are at and enjoying it with my girls. That's really important. But as far as golf course goes, greens are really always really fast and you have to put yourself in a good position when you get up there on the green and try not to force things.
What's a good week for you at the end of it all, Regan? Is it going to be results-based or is it going to be the experience that you take away from it?
I think a happy medium of both. I really want to put a solid performance together, but also knowing that this is an experience that you definitely don't want to squander and don't let the moment get too big and just enjoy it and have fun. I've met so many of my best friends through junior golf and amateur golf. So just being able to enjoy it with them and have an experience of a lifetime is super important to me.
You've had a great start to the season for Arkansas. Top 10, I believe, at the Darius Rucker event. You were top 5 in the Puerto Rico event just a few weeks ago. What kind of momentum do you bring into the Augusta National Women's Amateur?
Yeah, I think pulling a lot of confidence from my past results, especially in the last year or so, is super important. And just knowing that I can compete with the best in the world is also really important to me. And just knowing that my preparation is going to pay off, it's special being in season and also being able to compete at ANWA, just because you're already prepping for, you know, we leave for Clemson tomorrow. So I've been working really hard for that. And I think it really puts, at least I can speak for the three of us, in a really good position to just kind of be fresh and ready to go for the week. So
thank you so much for the time and really enjoy the experience coming up in a few weeks.
Thank you so much.